And I actually, this was the title which was announced, so it's somehow it will be actually somehow a continuation of the second talk, and probably I'll also talk about, yeah, no, actually I talked about the special class of functions, but maybe make some additional remarks. So it's, today I will talk about this work of Goetze with some modifications to his proof. And so this is about estimates of a number of integral points in big ellipsoids. So it's, yesterday actually I started to talk about that, but just I promised to repeat and then I fulfill my promise. So we start with a positive definite form, which is Q of X, and consider ellipsoid that the value of this form is not greater than S, so it's, if Q is just standard quadratic form and the sum of the squares, it will be the ball of radius S to the power 1/2. And, yeah, so of course there is a simple formula for the volume, but we're interested in the number of integral points in this ellipsoid. Now, it's very easy, and it's very classical results, that if you take volume of Z, the number of integral points in ES, and divide by the volume of ES, then when S tends to infinity, it will be 1. So this is probably essentially due to Gauss. But we are actually what want to get is some error terms for the number. So we take this volume Z of ES minus volume ES and want to get some estimates for this. So it's, so actually S, it somehow corresponds to the square of the radius, and so the volume of ES will be S to the is some constant dependent on quadratic form, S to D is the dimension, to D to the 1/2. And it's pretty easy to show that it's not greater than capital O to D to S to D 1/2 minus 1, but what we want to show that it actually will be this main term, but and then we want to go 2 degrees below. So this, and now there is a restriction of the dimension that D should be at least 5. And so it turns out that for smaller D's it's not true. Yeah, so if D is just 2, then it will be, yeah, it's maybe too small. And so D is 4. Now it's somehow the, in some sense I, yeah, maybe I'll just repeat the joke which I already said several times. So more or less the reason for why we need that 5 over 2 should be greater than 2. So that's somehow this inequality occurs many times in this proof. So it's, and so this is, okay, so in some sense this 2 is the degree of a quadratic form, and this is more or less L2. Okay, so now it's, yeah, there's some technical points how to just, I don't want to repeat, but now there is, quantity which is we're essentially going to study. This is to integrate this of a certain interval, which is, yeah, so interval actually is from the previous slide, so we take g of w as interval of n points r square plus w. Now it's and then it's possible to it's not difficult to show that that actually what we are going to study with this is absolute value of this error term is not greater than maximum of the r plus minus w of r plus this times cqw g to r to g minus 2. So the strategy of the proof somehow w is taken to be of order 1, but if we are talking about irrational forms, it should be somehow should tends to 0 when r tends to infinity. Now it's so the main tool is just the first main tool is to use theta series, and so this is the standard definition of the theta series. So this is theta of z, it will be a sum of the this exponent minus zero q of m over all integral points, and there is also theta integral. Now it's there is rather simple identity which should follow its residual calculus that if we integrate if b is positive then we integrate this exponent of zt with weight dz over z squared then it will be equal maximum of t in 0. So this is just one can easily check this using calculus of residues. Now take and just using this, one can get two equalities below. And then finally it will be this. So it's somehow we are interested in this RW of R. So this is actually the number which is going to be estimated. So it's so in some sense it's possible to forget about the original problem, but it is. So actually what I said before somehow it's some kind of rather simple exercise involving calculus of residues and set of function and but then it's so actually interested in estimates of this RW of R. So it's and so then it's just using the identities from the previous slides we get that this RW of R is equal to the this integral over this vertical line of the complex plane of theta minus theta 0 of z phi of z dz. And w is here between 0 and r square, and phi of z is just this function. Now, again, it's now it's just usual calculus, and so it's we need this estimates and this phi of now we take b is equal to r minus 2, and then one has this estimate. So it's more or less it says that, yes, it's not, yeah, so the second inequality says that if t is, say greater than r minus 2, then it will be more or less not greater than phi of r minus 2 plus it is not greater than inverse of t. And the second inequality is used to when t is tends to infinity. So it's Yeah, no, so it's, we have the, you know, somehow the main subject is somehow estimate, to give estimates of this integral. And now it's more or less in the tradition of analytic number theory, so it's so this integral of infinite line is representative of the sum of the integral of the three intervals. So one interval is very small, so it's, now let me go into detail. So we, again, so B is R minus 2, so we, now it's, there's this number kappa R, which is just some multiple of R inverse, so here pi is just, could be replaced by any fixed number. Now there's one okay, so this is 0, this is R minus 2. Now we take this interval, which is J0, so the length is of order R minus 1. And now there's a complement to this. And then it's, we just write this RW of R as the sum, okay, sum it with, of these three integrals. And so this will be I0, this next is I1, and the last one is I2. And again, as the, more or less, in, again, in the tradition of analytic number theory, so this, these two integrals is rather relatively easy to estimate, and the main work to be done is to estimate this I2. Okay, so one of the main tools in this Goetz's work is Poisson summation. Yeah, no, so it's, again, it's rather standard tool in number theory. So just, so Poisson summation says that if you take a function which satisfies certain regularity conditions, that sum of these functions over integral points is equal to the sum of the Fourier transform of the integral points. And now it's, there's this precise statement which for quadratic forms. So if we take quadratic exponent of the quadratic form, then we get Fourier transform, then quadratic form, more or less, quadratic form corresponds to a matrix, and so this matrix changes from Q to Q minus 1, and then there's also some constant which is related to, to pi. And so, and this is Fourier transform of the, there's a summation of M in ZD. So it's, so this is a function of M. So also you can consider this a function of X when X belongs to RG. So we consider Fourier transform of this function. And then it becomes some, so essentially there's a, this, but with some additional factors. Okay, so now it's for, here there's, for A equals 0, it becomes a little bit simpler, so it will be, so just, we don't have this A equals 0, so the Poisson summation becomes simpler, so it's, and actually, Poisson summations, how it's the most basic beginning tool in automorphic forms, and but it's, here it's used in slightly different context. Okay, so this is just a reminder of what the Poisson summation is. And now it's, yeah, so we have this, yeah, we have this three integrals, which is I0, I1, and I2. And as I said, for I0, just using Poisson summation and this inequality, which is actually applied when t is small enough, when t is between 0 and r minus 1, it's rather easy to show that this I0 is not, so this notation means that it's not greater than constant dependent on Q multiplied by R to D over 2. Yeah, so it requires some work, but it's relatively easy to prove. So it's, so you have to use Poisson summation, but then it's, and then essentially some rather simple calculus. Now for I1, it's actually much simpler, just a computation of certain integrals, and then it's, we get this inequality again, so that this sign that is d means that it's just less than some constant which depends on d. And finally, so it's what combining these bounds which we have so far, so we get that, and so how the some bound for error terms, and so there's this some constant dependent on Q, WR D minus 2 plus R D over 2 plus I2. And actually, it's, so we need to get this, so we have a D over 2 is D minus 2, and somehow this D over 2 should be less than D minus 2. And so this is, again, first time when it occurs, but actually this is not the crucial point. Okay, so now it's, I will talk about the estimation for I2, and then it's somehow the main estimate just for given t. Yeah, no, so strategy of the proof to get some estimate of the given t, but then it's integrate over certain intervals. No, the W shrinks. No. This is estimate of, no, this is estimate for the theta series. So theta series doesn't depend on W. But no, there is this. Yeah. Okay, so W, no, it's, No, there is a W which occurs in, okay, here. So we choose this W later, and here we have this RD over 2. No, W is multiplied by RD to minus 2. So we want to show that, say, for any quadratic form, that it's not greater than constant multiply RD to minus 2, r to the power d minus 2. So in this case, W will be of order of 1. But now here we have this rd over 2, so if d is at least 5, then it somehow it's... No, it's a, we cannot get better than d minus... No, the W doesn't... No, the W tends to, okay, so it's, now, for all forms with W is taken to be of order of 1. For irrational forms, W somehow tends to 0. So then W RG to, for irrational forms, we want to show that this is actually small o of this. No, but when we for this small w, so some other estimates will be worse. Yes. Okay. So now it's yeah. Okay. So this is So this is from. Now there's this estimation for somehow the main inequality just for individual t is this. So it's so you would take the value of the theta series at the point r minus 2 plus it, then it's not greater than again some constant dependent of q, and then there's r to the power d over 2, and then there's this psi of RT to the power 1/2, and psi of RT is this long double sum. So it's a summation of we take M and N and over ZD and take this double summation. So it's here we have R square minus R square over 2, and take so Q inverse, Q can be considered as a positive definite matrix, so Q inverse is also a matrix. And then we consider this as a form and take value of this form and this Pm plus 2tqn. And then there is a minus 2r squared q of n. So this is, and we take exponent of this. Now it's probably I have to go back for just to this alpha function which were defined last time, and so more or less there is a rather simple inequality which some equivalence that if we take sum of e to minus norm of x square, where x belongs to a certain lattice, then it will be equivalent to alpha of delta. So it's, for example, if delta is a unimodular lattice. So how the main contribution into this sum corresponds to vectors x which have norm not greater than 1. And then there's a sum e to minus norm x squared decreases very fast. So it's, and then it's, so alpha of delta is more or less, as I mentioned last time, is essentially the number of integral points, a number of lattice points in the ball of radius 1. Now, using this observation, it's one can get, instead of, so using the inequality above, so one can get this, that absolute value of r minus square plus itp over 2 will be, again, not greater than this constant q, then r to d over 2. And there are these functions alpha d, which I defined last time, and this is, and then we take this linear transform matrix gr, and then ut and z to d, to, and we take alpha of d to 1/2. So it's maybe just I briefly Yeah, maybe just to repeat what is. So there was, so alpha I of delta was the maximum of 1 over G of L. So L is delta rational. So delta rational means that L intersection delta is co-compact in L, and L is a subspace, and the dimension of L is equal to I. And G of L is the co-volume of, is the volume of L by L intersection delta. And alpha of delta was the maximum, okay, so n of alpha I of delta. Now it's maybe some, and now so here the n is 2d, so it's, so this is the original dimension was d, so this is two d dimensional matrix, 2d by 2d, and actually both of these matrices are symplectic matrices, and using the fact that they are symplectic is actually rather easy to show that in this case, so the lattices which we consider, so let's say alpha d gr ut z to d is equal to alpha, so the maximum is just achieved when d is equal to, when I is equal to d. So because the, so this is a symplectic matrix, and so this is also an important observation. Now it's, so just I going to explain how one can get this, the inequality above. So, and this is uses again Poisson summation and some, and also essentially parallelogram equality. Now let me go to this. So it's, yeah, for some technical reason, so it's instead of this lattice, yeah, so it's instead of, you know, we have this theta series, so we want to represent the sum of it to the 2 to the power d of summations over some smaller sublattices. So this is, yeah, so there's the definition of the sublattices. So we take, again, 2 to the d sublattices, so they index by 0 and 1, so it, and then there's a, some congruence condition that we take M and ZD such that M is a congruent to alpha modulo, modulo 2. And then, of course, yeah, there's this theta alpha of Z, it's just sum of these sublattices. No, actually, it's a, these sublattices, only one of them contains zero, others are translation of, so they're translation of one of another, and so it's, now it's, yeah, of course the theta of Z is equal sum of this, and then it's using Cauchy-Schwarz inequality or whatever, so as we get, yeah, so to get an estimate for theta of Z, absolutely, it's enough to get estimates for theta alpha of Z. Now it's, it will be clear in a minute why we should, why it's we should consider sublattices but not original lattices. Now there's a quite long sequence of equalities and inequalities. Okay, so now first there's this two equalities about quadratic form. So it's first is, is a parallelogram equality, so that sum of the squares of length of the diagonal is equal to sum of the squares of length of sides. And there is also somewhat similar that, so this is the standard inner product, and so just simple computation shows this. Now using this, so one, yeah, no, so on this slide we don't use Poisson summation yet. So okay, so now let's go. Okay, so we take square epsilon beta the square of theta alpha. Then of course it's equal to theta alpha multiplied with a conjugate complex number. Now it will be then we get product of two sums. So just here we have r minus 2 plus itu q of m, and here r minus 2 minus itu q of m. Now after that we go to not just expand brackets and get this. So it's we have this, so for real part we have r minus 2 q of m plus q of n, and for imaginary part we have, okay, we have this it, we have t, and then q of m minus q of n. And somehow it's some say it's important that for real part we have q of m plus q of n, for imaginary part there is a difference. Okay, so now it's, yeah, now we use this parallelogram equality and another equality and get that this is equal to this double sum. So it will be r minus 2 q of m plus q of n, and then plus it of q of m minus q of n. Yeah, okay, and then it's, yeah, no, here we have this minus 1 or 2 r square q of m plus n, q of m minus n plus it q of m plus n m minus n. And then finally it's this, just we take this denote m plus n over 2 by m bar and m minus n over 2 by n bar, and then just we rewrite this just this sum is in this form. Now it's clear why we need not, yeah, we actually here this m bar and n bar will be run over entire ZD, and then it's clear that is why we need the Z alpha D. We started with ZD, then it will be m bar and n bar will be in bigger, let's say ZD over 2. No, so this is just essentially some technical remarks of why we need to consider this sublattices Z alpha D. Okay, so now it's, yeah, no, so unfortunately there's only one overhead projector, so it's, I cannot keep this. Now it's, so there was this double sum, and yeah, no, so maybe just a flash. Okay, so there's this double sum where this m bar and n bar. And now in this double sum we fix n bar. So after that what we get? So it will be, yeah, we fix n sum over m bar. And then we use Poisson summation just over m bar. So it's quite, and then it's, we get, you know, so using this Poisson summation, we get this, you know, so first there's this definition of theta of z n bar, so it's, yeah, this is just, we fix n bar, and then we take, it will be just simple sum, and then it's using Poisson summation, we get this. And then we just use this for every n bar and then sum of n bar, and then we get this inequality for theta of z square, which is not greater than what we need to prove. So we just take square root of this inequality and get the inequality which we need. So it's okay. So now so somehow it's quite remarkable trick. So there's this double sum, and then change of variables. So you're using parallelogram equality, we introduce new variables m plus n and m minus n, and then there's a Poisson summation over one of them, and then then we get this somehow matrices are involved. Okay, so now so this is a part which involves Poisson summations and parallelogram equality, and now but somehow after that there is so we express this theta of z in terms of this so we have integral, we get estimate for alpha g to the power 1/2, and after that we have to integrate this estimate over when t is between minus infinity plus infinity of some weight, which is lattice is in 2D dimensional lattice. Yeah, because this is GR and UT, so GR is, so these are symplectic matrices. So. So this lattice is 2D dimensional. And these are symplectic matrices. Okay, now there is more or less the. So another part, and in this part the main theorem is this estimate for this integral of 0,1 of alpha g to the power beta, and then we get this. So now here there's this important assumption that beta g is greater than 2. Now actually we need estimates, the first we need for beta is equal to 1/2, and then again we have this. So using just for 1/2, we get some upper bounds for this capital O for all forms. Now, to get for irrational forms, there is additional trick, so we use for some smaller beta, and then using some estimates on alpha d at all points, we get some better estimates when beta is equal to 1/2. Now maybe before finishing this part, so we have to. Actually, we need estimates not just this integral, but with this weight, which is psi of t, and it's a function which is, when t tends to 0, is actually of order t to minus 1. So therefore, there is this some tricks, which is, somehow we divide the area of integration into some small intervals, so when a is small, we take a plus a square, and then, so there's quite a long but simple computation with matrices, and then we go in from integration of this interval to integration from 0 to 1 and then apply this theorem, and then it's just computations show what we need. But okay, so it's yeah, you use the theorem, but it's the theorem is integration from 0 to 1, and here integration from a to a plus a square. Yeah, because when a is small, for example, we need to integrate from a to 2a. And in this case, the psi actually is large, so it's not enough to use this from 0 to 1, but then just by some transformations we reduce to integration from 0 to 1, but somewhat for a little bit different lattice and a little bit different u and also g. And then it's going from this, so it's just there's final estimate for this part is just estimate of the integral from a to 2a, and then there is a so here we have not just r to beta g minus 2, but we have a, then we get something. And when we have this weight dt, one over t minus 1, then we get also this factor of a to beta g minus 2. So it's somehow essentially by some luck, we can compensate this 1 over a just using this trick. And now this remark about, so what should be done in the case of a rational form. Now let me go back to just to this theorem, and so we have to estimate this 0 to 1, and now let's go back to these matrices. Okay, so there are these 2D dimensional matrices, which are symplectic, and they are images of some standard matrices under certain representations of SO2. So we take the following matrices R minus 1, and then we take, say, 1 T0, 1. And then there is a certain, essentially it will be a copy of, is the sum of D copies of the standard representation. So here we have just a standard representation modified by this Q. So a little bit some skewed sum. Okay, so if we denote this by, okay, so here it's UT, so just let's denote this by VT, and here this is DR. So we have this representation of, so let's form a rho, then rho of GR will be equal to GR, and rho of VT is equal to UT. Now we want to integrate, okay, some from 0 to 1 of alpha d of this g r u t applied to certain lattice delta to the power 1/2, or maybe to the power beta, and we want to get estimates for that. Now it will just replace this gr and ut by this, so it will be integral from 0 to 1 alpha d, and then it's a rho of gr dt applied to delta to the power of 1 half. Now it's, so as I talked about yesterday, so it's, so yesterday we considered slightly different integral, so that we had so here we integrate over essentially over the sum integral in unipotent group, but there were so integration over so we considered this kinds of integrals alpha of A t k, no, it was integral of the k and apply delta and then to some bit, and then there was integration of the k. Now it's, so here this, instead of k, we consider integral in a unipotent group. Now there is this, some simple observation from hyperbolic geometry, which says that, okay, so we have this, so what we have? We start with integral of the unipotent group and then translate by AT. So this is UT, and then it's, we trans, okay, maybe it's here, it's, we want to talk about in SL2, it will be VT, and here it will be, so we use GR VT. But now we replace this, so this is some part of the unipotent group, but instead of integration of this part, we integrate over compact group. Now, when we translate by dr, so it's, so the dynamics is the following. So it's, essentially we have a conjugation by dr, so it's, this conjugation expands exponentially this unipotent part. It doesn't change this diagonal part, but in the direction of, okay, in a negative unipotent group, so we have exponential. So it's the translation of this, so actually drk will be on some bounded distance from this translation of this interval. And therefore, we can, in order to get the estimates for which we want here, we can replace this integration from 0 to 1 of this ut by integration of the k. And for this k, so we can use this technique which was shortly explained last time, and so maybe just I talk a little bit, just repeat this, somehow just put this in general context. Yeah, and so it's just, maybe you can essentially forget about what was said before, just as some general philosophy which involves this alpha function. So we have this, so now we take this, say, omega n, so it will be, n is not necessarily 2D, so it's the space of unimodular lattices. Now we have this functions alpha I of delta, and also we have this alpha of delta, which is maximum of this. Now, suppose that we have some, so actually it's possible to, so we take, so omega n is g mod gamma, where g is SLNR, and gamma is SLNZ. Now we can take, let's take some probability measure on G and assume that it has the compact support. Now it's, we can define an operator which corresponds to this measure, so it's on acts on functions, and actually acts on any, if we take x belongs to some space where gx, then we can define this operator, so it will be integral of the g, f of, okay, gx, give me all of g. Now we apply this now there's this, in general, there's a system of inequalities which are similar to what was mentioned last time, so it will be alpha a mu applied to alpha I is some constant which depends on I and mu, and actually there is explicit expression for this constant alpha I, and then plus, and then there is some constant omega again which depends on mu. Actually, we wrote square, but it somehow is not that important. And then it's maximum, where j is between 0 and minimum of n minus I and, and I. And here there's a square root of alpha I plus j, alpha I minus j. So there's this linear term in this inequality, and there's a nonlinear term. And now, actually, for indefinite forms, so there we needed cases where we wanted, so there was a certain measure mu, and we needed that C of I mu was not greater than 1. And when we could get this, for certain measures, so this is for indefinite forms, and then we got this forms in specific mu. And now after that we considered this function sum of epsilon I n minus I alpha I. No, actually also there's also here this constant beta, and then it also should be depends on beta, and here it also depends on beta, and then it's alpha I to the beta. So we consider this, and then it's for certain, if epsilon is small enough, we get that, okay, just denote this for a moment as alpha epsilon beta, and then it turns out that alpha a mu alpha epsilon beta is not greater than constant alpha epsilon beta plus, and there's a sum number which is some number. Now it's, what is C? And C is more or less this maximum of C I mu, okay, over all I. Now again, so for indefinite forms, somehow what we wanted to achieve, that C is not greater than 1. So for this, yeah, for this matrices, somehow it's Actually, the C will be greater than 1, but we need very precise estimates. And this is now this measure mu will be, so the A mu is, it will be, so instead of A mu we consider, you know, so it's a special case, consider A R, which will be integral from over K, okay, A R F of X was integral over K on this F of G R applied to K and applied to X, and that's G sigma of K. So this is, so everything is goes inside SL2R. And for that, we actually need very precise, that this constants are very precise estimates, and they are, so actually this constant more or less of the form of integral 0 to 2 pi G, okay, dx of a square cosine square x plus a minus 2 sine square x, and then to some power, and actually say lambda over 2, so it's, and you know, so it's a, so it depends on A and depends on lambda. So form, now it's, for fixed A, it will be a convex function of lambda. And so when lambda is equal to 0 and lambda is 2, it will be, okay, so let's write this, maybe just H A of lambda. Then H A of 0 is equal to H A of 2. And is equal to 1, so after certain normalization, probably should be 1 over 2 pi. And actually, there is this HA of 1 minus lambda is equal to HA of lambda. Yeah, it should be consistent. Lambda. Huh? Yeah, I said 2 minus. Yeah, 2 minus lambda. Okay, and this is a convex function, so it should be, so the graph is, so it's a positive function, so, and again, so this is, lambda is more or less bounded by dimension, so it's, actually it's most interesting when lambda is equal to d. And again, it should be, so it should be greater than 1, so it's again we have that this d over 2 should be greater than 2. And so this, yeah, and somehow it's the, yeah, and so here we actually need very precise estimates for this kind of integrals. And actually, one, you know, so it's not completely trivial, but it's, for example, one of the facts which is used in the proof that if you, yeah, so it's, we consider finite dimensional representations of SL2, so they are sum of irreducible representations, and irreducible representations are representation of the space of homogeneous polynomials of degree n. And what is used in this estimate is that every polynomial of degree n of a complex number somehow can be decomposed into the product of, uniquely into a product of linear polynomials. And then using this and some generalized Herzen inequality, we get estimates which I need it for this purpose. So this is, yeah, so now let me say, so I was talking about the result of Gotsu, so after, yeah, so this, yeah, so this estimates from his work, and but he proceeds somehow in somewhat different way, not using these inequalities, but using some, not combinatorial, but some Catherine arguments. And now there is this work in progress, which joint work with Goetze on in the indefinite forms, again in dimension 5, so get essentially some kind of effective proof of the Oppenheim conjecture, and also some give some effective estimates for related problems. And then there's some, you know, somewhat similar technique to that, and it's a different kind of, yeah, integrals which are considered, but, and then there's some somewhat similar similar estimates, and then there's this inequalities for alpha i's which are used. And it's according to, yeah, and so according to Goetze, so they had paper with, previous paper with Benkert for dimension started with 9, and so they were able to prove, so using some more elementary methods just for indefinite forms, but it seems that for between, when, between 5 and 9, so maybe it probably doesn't work. So. Okay, so this is somehow very brief sketch of what I wanted to say about this. Now, it's, actually, there was in the announcement of lecture, there was about the random walks. So, it's, and actually, for random walks, it's, we consider certain measures, and then we take, for certain small beta, we can make that this constant is strictly less than 1. And the statement is from the joint work with Alice Eskin, is that if we have random walk in this space of lattices, which corresponds to measure which satisfies rather mild conditions, that this random walk cannot go to infinity. So we have recurrence to compact sets. So we have this, and so we have stationary measure which actually sits on the space itself. Okay, so probably it's exactly the time to finish.